Hello and welcome to episode 11 or 12. Not sure if I'm calling this 12 or 11 because we had that special short episode with Mirosław Olenski from Warsaw talking about the war in Ukraine and our 48-hour anti-war special project. And I hope some of you out there are getting on that. Because it's very, very important. It's the people in Ukraine do not deserve this. This is a completely unwarranted invasion of a sovereign nation. So please, 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 please grab your cameras and make a 30-second to 7-minute long anti-war film supporting the people of Ukraine and the innocent citizens of Russia who are not involved in this and are dragged into this unwillingly. So let's show some support and get some films made, and we'll have them showcased on the 48-hour film project website, hopefully next week. Time is of the essence. They are currently being shelled as I speak these words. So please, let's get this done. But on to our current episode. I have a very special guest with me. I was so happy to have her on. Her name is Amy Lillard, and she is the Washington State Film Commissioner and the Executive Director of Washington Filmworks. And Washington Filmworks is the organization that manages the Washington State Film Incentive. So if you bring a production to Washington State and want to take advantage of our film incentive program, you are most likely going to talk to Amy or one of her associates at Washington Filmworks, and they're all just fantastic. They're a great organization, great people. Amy has been incredibly supportive of the 48-hour film project here in Seattle. She's been a judge twice. She really helped out with some logistics and getting locations and speaking kindly on our behalf when we hosted Filmapalooza in 2017 here. And as we get into the episode, Amy and I realized just how long we've known each other. I think we've known each other since 2006 at this point, when we both worked at the same post-production company here in Seattle. That was where we met. So please welcome Amy Lillard, Washington State Film Commissioner and Executive Director of Washington Filmworks. So it really doesn't matter what you look like, say or do. All right. Welcome to episode 11 of 48 Hour Heroes Origin Stories. I have a very special guest with me here today, Amy Lillard, Executive Director of Washington Filmworks and the Washington State Film Commissioner. Welcome, Amy.
Well, thank you. That's totally me, Amy Lillard from Washington Filmworks.
I think I met you in 2006 when I started freelancing at Modern Digital, and you were still there.
Wow, we are old.
Yeah, that was quite a while ago.
No, I would like to say we're established.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, gosh, Modern Digital is a flashback.
I know. Mm-hmm. That was a long time ago. It was like my first real post job.
That was a great experience for me.
Oh, me too. I learned so much.
You know, that's what I loved about the Fazios. Mm-hmm. I mean, I walked in and had like all of this other experiences, but was missing post. Mm-hmm. And they talked me through everything. I learned the procedures. I learned, like, it was great.
Yeah, they took a chance on me. I remember when I was, so I like to joke that my midlife crisis happened when I was 30.
Really?
And I decided to go to film school. I got laid off from a job working at an events company in the multimedia part, doing, you know, web and print production, graphics production. And in April of 2001, they just, like, even though our company was making, our department was making money hand over fist. It was insane how much money we were making. And they just shut us down. And it was really weird. It was like right before that big dot-com bubble burst.
Yeah. And how do I not know this about you? Since we've known each other for so long, how did I not know this?
What? It was a long time ago. It was, another life entirely.
Here's the half full. The midlife crisis, it's done. You're done with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I was 30 and I was thinking about moving back to the Bay Area and finishing up my degree in photography. But, you know, I made the best friends of my life here.
Yeah.
And like, I don't want to move. And then I heard about the 40-week program at the Seattle Film Institute and went, I can commit to 40 weeks. Yeah, sure. Thought I'd go into cinematography, wound up in editing. And
look at you now.
Yeah. I get to spend a lot of time at home staring at progress bars.
By the way, I appreciate that, though, because you've been a friend of Filmworks for a long time.
Well, it's an important organization.
It is. Yeah, I agree.
Especially with, you know, Oregon to the south and Montana to the east and the giant Canadian behemoth to the north. I mean, you're working to get work for people here. It's very important.
No, I know. But one of my favorite things is the 48-hour film festival. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Right. Well, you've been a huge supporter for a very, very long time.
Love it.
And I was really excited because it was you, Sean Telford, and Lacey as judges. I think it was in 2015, the year we had an insane amount of films. That was our high watermark. We had 84. And it was really fun having you as part of the judging panel. And just your reaction to seeing all those films. Because you really deal with the upper echelon of filmmakers in Washington State. And I remember you commented, like, I had no idea that there were this many, you know, young, undiscovered filmmakers in the Seattle, in the Washington area. So, I mean, what, if you could elaborate on that, what was your response after seeing these films?
So first and foremost, like, I now every single year look at the films and I'm like, what is the next generation of filmmaker coming out of Washington State from the 48-hour film festival? Like, it was extraordinary to sit, by the way, and it's like those films are made in such a short amount of time and the talent that you're seeing on screen is stunning, right? It's stunning. And so I see it as an opportunity in the work that I do to look into the community that I serve and be like, how do we support the next generation of filmmaker in Washington State? And that's really honestly what I love so much about it.
Yeah, that's a big part of our goal, is to foster an environment and a construct, which is the two-day filmmaking competition, to be an incubator, a platform for people to develop their careers. And that's one of my favorite things, is when I see someone develop over the years and I love their films, and then they're like, I can't do it this year, I'm too busy with work.
Which is awesome.
It's a bummer, but it's also awesome because I know a couple years, you know, 3-4 years down the line, they'll be, you know, their souls will be crushed doing corporate work. And they're like, I need to make a short film. And they'll come back and do the 48.
Well, and the thing that I noticed when we first started connecting on this front is that you are cultivating this sense of community, right? So even if you are in the corporate job and can't do the 48, you are coming to the screening because you know the people who are involved. And it's not, yes, it's a competition and there is a lot of friendly competition going on, but it is about community. And so when I walk into that, you know, well, I remember when we used to walk into rooms. Remember that, Kurt? It's coming back, I'm
we're
sure.
We're in a room together right now. We're at Solo Bar.
It's one of my favorites in Seattle.
I met my wife here.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, right at the corner over there.
Well, that's your lucky spot.
Yeah.
Maybe I should sit there, find some love. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a great place. Yeah. Well, you know, Val, he's been a supporter of the 48s since this place opened, and you know.
Every time I come here to Solo Bar, I meet someone creative, someone I've never met before. Like we were just sitting there, and I met Michael, who's a pianist.
Michael Ovcharuk.
Right there, you go.
He's great. He's fantastic.
That's why we love Val and the Solo Bar.
Exactly. This is a community space that fosters the arts. This is the theater bar in. I guess we're calling this part of town Uptown now.
Is that what we're calling it?
Yeah, it's not Lower Queen Anne anymore.
It's just Solo Bar to me. So I was saying to Val when I walked in tonight that I brought Juan Mas, the director of Hamlet, and Nike Amoru, who played Hamlet, to the bar last weekend I saw the show. So
excellent. Bringing the Spokane people into
Spokane right here in Seattle. But I want to go back to this sense of community, right? I mean, you walk into, you know, this environment where people have been into the screenings and people have been through this crazy experience making projects, and you can feel it. Yeah. You can feel like people rooting for each other.
Exactly.
And this friendly competition too, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
And like, it's this sense of like, we did this individually, but together. And that is one of the things that I love about the 48.
Yeah. It's a pretty universal idea internationally in all the cities.
Is it?
Yeah,
because you've
been
to a lot of them.
Yeah. And I've been to screenings in LA, and I've been to screenings in Portland, and it's a friendly rivalry at best amongst the filmmakers. I find that the filmmakers that get the most out of the 48-hour film project are the people that do it to have fun and embrace the challenges proposed by the event. And we do get some hyper-competitive people, and honestly, I don't think they do as well as the others, because they're in it for the award.
It's the
and
spirit
the
of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The spirit of it generates better films.
I think so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think if you embrace the challenges and the community around you, you know, everyone's rooting for your film when it's up on the screen.
Everyone's rooting for you. I have a question though.
Yeah.
So do you ever see like teams moving to other teams? Like, do they like break up and like go to new teams, or like they stay in the same team? Like, what's that like?
Oh, I've seen every like permutation that's possible. So you'll see an actor who got attached to a team that they didn't gel with 1 year. And then they decide, oh, I'm going to do my own team, but they don't have the professional connections. So we hold events here at Solo, and they come and they'll meet a composer, and they'll meet a director of photography. They'll meet some other actors. And this individual will put together a team with people they met at one of our social events.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It's about community.
Yeah.
And like, you're talking about the weekend, but it is those things that you do to generate this sense of...
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what I love about
it.
Okay. So, you know, for a long, long time, I produced the Fly Filmmaking Challenge.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay. So you are evil, because we gave them like a week to make something. So for those that might not know, the Fly Filmmaking Challenge was similar in spirit, but very different in execution.
Yeah, it's more of a showcase than a competition.
A showcase. And it was about showcasing local talent at the Seattle. So, but what was interesting is like, we would give them some challenges so that they couldn't make it in advance, but you do it in 48 hours. So having produced that program, I think for 10, 12, something like years, like it is unbelievable what I see on that screen in 48 hours. And when they don't do anything in advance, it's incredible.
I mean, they're allowed to put together cast and crew, secure locations, and amass props and wardrobe. but no writing or
it's
story development.
It's the same spirit. It's the exactly. same spirit, right?
Well, I remember in 2013, you asked me to do a video montage opening for the Fly films, and I had a blast doing that.
It was a blast. That program was so awesome.
It's something that Seattle filmmakers really aspired to be a part of. You know, I always wanted to do one, but I was never asked. And
totally not my fault.
I know the whole process behind it, and I've never resented that. But I would love to bring it back once SIFF gets back to kind of a normal in-person or hybrid in-person event.
Going back to what you do, is everyone is part of
exactly.
the environment, and learning and growing and all of those things. And I think again, so much love for the Fly Filmmaking Challenge.
I love it.
But this is a different thing, and yeah. I think, it was interesting when, I've been a judge, which is very hard.
Twice.
Hard for me. Very, very hard. Because there's a lot of good in there.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of categories, which gives a lot of opportunity. Right?
Yeah.
But you are an evil man.
I'm doing my job. Excellent.
I mean, evil man. And it's so hard.
Well, I appreciate the time and effort that you put into it.
The filmmakers
appreciate it.
Yeah.
For the horror this last year, so we had local comedian Derek Sheen is one of the judges because he's a huge horror nut. And
I didn't know that about him.
Yeah, huge horror nut.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I didn't know. Okay. Yeah.
And my friend Dima Levenchuk, mm-hmm. who I met through the 48, and I went to his wedding, and he's one of my best friends, and he and his wife are massive, massive horror fans. And the weird thing is
massive horror. Okay, yeah. We're going to talk about that in a second, but go ahead.
So for a while, Dima and his wife, Hillary, both worked for Funko in the marketing department. Dima was the video guy. And so they'd go to all the cons all over the world promoting Funko. And they got to meet a bunch of very interesting people. And it was summer of 2020. Dima wasn't working full time for Funko anymore. But he had a freelance gig, and he said, "Hey, do you have some time to help me edit some music videos?" I'm like, "Yeah, sure, of course. I'd love to. I love editing music videos. They're fun." And he goes, "You ever heard of a band called Anthrax?" And my jaw just dropped and hit the floor. Anthrax!
Seriously?
Yeah, I mean, one of my all-time favorite bands. I love Jokes. Anthrax. And yeah, he got to know Charlie Benante, the drummer for Anthrax, because he's a huge Funko fanatic. And he's like, "Yeah, they're part of this virtual metal festival in Germany, and they need 3 videos edited." And I'm like, "Which songs?" He's like, "Well, Time."
Did it matter?
It didn't really matter, but if I was going to do more than one, I wanted to cherry pick it, from my teen years. So I got to do Madhouse and I Am the Law. It was just too iconic.
How was that for you?
I was a kid in a candy store.
I bet you were.
Because, the first footage I got was Scotty Ian, and, he's an idol of mine. And I'm like, "Oh my God, there's Scotty Ian on my screen. There's Frank. There's Joey. Oh my God, there's Charlie. Holy shit. This is
How
amazing.
Many times did you watch the footage before you actually edit it?
I got it all synced up first. The first thing. Okay. So that I could, and I was just switching through the cameras. Like, "Oh my God, there they are. They're playing Madhouse. This is amazing." And then I did those 2 videos, and, I watched it as it played at the fest. And then about a month later, Charlie texted me. He's like, "Hey, do you have some time? Dima's really busy with something." And, Charlie was working on a solo album of covers that he was doing over COVID. And so he was doing a cover of U2's City of Blinding Lights with Mark Osegueda from Death Angel. And again, another band that my first mosh pit was at a Death Angel show when I was 15. At the Mountain View Theater in Mountain View, California. And so I'm sitting there like, you know, I'm watching.
Formative memories.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I saw that mosh pit and just went. You know, I was a swimmer at the time. I was swimming like 10 miles a day. So I was, you know, 6'4" with a swimmer's body. I was like, all right, I'm going to go charge around in a circle with all these other jackasses. And oh, it was fun. And yeah, so I got to edit two members of Anthrax, lead singer for Death Angel, covering a U2 song. It was great.
I mean, that's like a dream.
For me, yeah. It's yeah. Unbelievable.
Do you like doing the music videos?
I do. I love it.
You do.
I
is it because it's short and sweet?
No, it's really my favorite thing. I think my favorite thing to edit is bands performing, performers
on stage, live.
Live.
Mm-hmm. Which video are you most proud of, or maybe not most proud of, but which are you like, wow, that's good work.
One of my favorites was Val's band Culture Shock.
Love the Culture Shock.
Yeah. I can't remember the name of the song. They're all in, you know, Serbo-Croatian. Mm-hmm. But they did a performance video. It was probably 2017, 2018. And they just shot in their rehearsal studio. And I had 42 angles to play with.
Are you kidding me?
They did multiple takes, like of each, because there's six people in the band. And
how does that work with editing? That's like,
it's
painful.
A colossal pain in the ass. I spent more time setting up the project than editing it. Mm-hmm. But it was so much fun because they're such expressive performers, and it's also in an odd time signature, so I had to learn the time signature, which was fun.
But from a technical standpoint, right, so you've got the six cameras. Mm-hmm. Do you literally watch every camera, and then are you like marking it in your mind? Like, are you editing in your mind? Like, how does that literally work?
Well, the way I did this is I took each. So there were, you know, six of Gino, seven of Chris, the drummer, X number for each member. Mm-hmm. And one wide shot. So I set the wide shot down.
Thank God for the wide shot.
Yeah, exactly. The palate cleanser. It's the. The Swiss Army knife of the editor's
amen
toolbox.
To that, yeah.
And I grouped each person in the band into a multicam sequence. Mm-hmm. And then I went through and edited each person according to the music. And then I laid all these multi-track sequences on top of each other and then set those up as another multi. It was.
But you know them, right?
Yeah.
So does that make it easier or harder for you?
Oh, way, 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 way easier, because not only are they friends of mine, they're one
of my... He wouldn't like that on camera. Like, he doesn't want to be seen like that. Right?
Yeah. They're also one of my favorite bands. So it's super easy for me. I mean, I know the music inside and out.
Remind me, we did something together way, way, way long ago where I brought a bunch of people up from LA and like you edited Culture Shock into it. Do you remember that?
Oh God. What
I mean,
was
it
that?
Was so long ago. Like it was like I was selling the state of Washington.
I vaguely remember
you
that.
You do,
I don't,
right? I know, but... because at the end you put the Culture Shock video. Oh, that's what it was. At like, we're like, hey, thank you for coming to Washington State. We sent them a video and we put the Culture Shock because they went to a Culture Shock show.
Yes.
That is right.
Yeah.
A bunch of super heavy hitter green lighters from Los Angeles.
They played at Numo's or something.
They did. Yep.
Yeah.
And then at the end, they had the best time. Like, we did all these amazing things. And the thing that they remembered most was Culture Shock. And so, of course, at the end, Kirk has to put the video.
I got
to
plug my buddies.
It was brilliant.
Produced in Seattle.
Produced in Seattle. That's what we do. So.
Yeah. It's...
That was so long ago.
I know. Well, it's funny. I was just kind of running over in my head, you know, some questions to ask and topics for us to talk about. And one thing that I'm
afraid
still,
about what you're about to say.
I'm still super embarrassed by this.
Oh.
It was the first Seattle Film Summit. And I cannot remember what the panel was, but you and James Keblis were on stage.
Oh, that was ages ago.
Yeah, and I was just bitter about it. I think I was feeling kind of isolated, like a little social circle of mine had collapsed or something. Mm. And I just felt kind of alone. And I remember asking you some cockamamie stupid fucking question about social silos in the Seattle filmmaking community, and you shut me down so fast.
Oh, damn it. Did I?
Well, because other people were talking about the same thing, and it was just like, as it was coming out of my mouth, I was just like, why the fuck am I saying this?
So I saved you by shutting
you
down.
Away. I mean, you deflected, but it was obvious you were like, not this fucking question again.
Dude, I don't even remember this, but I do have a reputation for being very direct.
Yeah, yeah.
For better or worse.
Yeah, and I could just, James is rolling his eyes, and seriously, it's coming out of my mouth, and I'm just going, why? Why am I saying this? I couldn't stop myself.
I love it that it's like still in your brain, because like I am like, don't. But that was a long time ago. If James Keblis was at the city. Yeah. I mean, that was a long time ago.
That was a very long time ago. And
I've learned a lot in life. Yeah. learned a lot. But like, I don't remember that at all.
Oh, I'm glad. Because it was, yeah, it just ate at me. And
I'm not sure if I love or hate the fact that you said that I shut it down. But
well, it wasn't so much that you shut it down, but you very directly deflected away. Like, that's not our responsibility.
We call that the pivot and shift.
There you go. It was, no, I don't know. It was very effective. And I was just sitting there going, God, I'm such a moron.
This is why. So I'm government adjacent, as I like to say, because I run a legislatively commissioned something. Yeah. But I'm a private nonprofit. So, yeah, I pivot and shift. I'm direct. It's like I'm not in all love and respect. Like, I don't work for, you know, I get funded by the government. But I don't work in government.
Yeah.
Which is why we're able to pivot and shift.
Yeah. And it was,
I mean, those were like the formative days, though, at the Northwest Film Forum at the Seattle Film Summit, which is like doing amazing things in Washington State.
Yeah. No, I mean, Northwest Film Forum, it's the incubator for indie film in Seattle. I mean, just look at the people that have graduated.
And
quote unquote.
Although I think you're like discrediting what you're doing in Washington and Seattle. Like I really feel like I give it up for Northwest Film Forum as a place to cultivate talent and like for people to feel community and all that. I think you're discounting what you do at the 48. I mean,
I don't mean to do that, but.
Well, I really need to just reiterate that.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
But I mean, Northwest Film Forum serves a different function.
It has
a very different function. And
yes.
I will, you know, after my mom died, I had a little bit of money kind of burning a hole in my pocket. And I basically just spent the year whenever Northwest Film Forum needed some money. I'm like, I got some money. Here we go.
Right. Who's been to those auctions? Everyone raises the paddle, and I have two.
Yeah, I bought a table that year at their annual fundraiser.
Yep,
got outbid on the like signed Pearl Jam poster by Mike McCready.
Is that right?
I was so bummed.
Why was I not at your table? Oh, that's right, because I shut you down.
This is 2018.
I was just kidding.
Trust me, I felt like such an idiot. But
you shouldn't feel like an idiot. I like when I get hard questions. Yeah.
Well, it was so tangential to the discussion at all. And it was just like, why am I saying? I felt like idiot.
Clearly, I was not at your table in 2018.
I brought a bunch of 48 people.
That's like better.
Angela and David and the Harvey brothers.
Dude,
and
I love them.
How can you not?
I am trying to like recruit them into my life.
They're fantastic people and very,
by the way,
very
nobody
talented.
Knows who they are, but okay. Yes.
Angela DeMarco and David Hogan, they run Mighty Tripod Studios and they teach classes and they're both fantastic actors and they've done the 48 a ton of stuff. They were city winner in 2016.
And they, yeah.
And
they inspire me. I mean, like every time I see them, they're like making a living, being creative. And then I am allowed to like plug something else?
Yeah, of course.
So the Shoreline Short Film Festival is happening here in March, and like they have another film there. Like every time they just show up in every opportunity to create.
Yeah.
And sometimes that means making money. Sometimes that means just being creative. They are making a living being creative. And I have to tell you, David is one of the most amazing photographers I have ever seen. And like, I just love what they do. I love that they're part of the community. And, you know, I just think, and I know they've made like 48 like films forever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like the world's most photogenic dog.
Bruno. By the way, Bruno, the dog, is like famous in Seattle.
I know. Bruno's, and like Megan's cat, Snugs.
I don't know what you're talking about. By the way, I feel like but this is the whole thing. Like social media is like the way of the world. So I got to get Lily on there. Lily, the dog.
Oh, yeah.
Your dogs are cute.
Oh, yeah. My dogs are great. Though I think they're trying to kill me.
Slowly they do.
Slowly over time.
That's their like MO.
Exactly. Well, let's get back to Filmapalooza. So Seattle was the host in 2017.
Correct.
Which was
super fun for me. Seeing all of those amazing filmmakers here was amazing.
Well, it's, you know, headquarters runs a really good operation for setting up Filmapalooza. This is the 20th anniversary, so the formula, the schedule is all pretty much laid out. We have it mapped out. And when I was asked to make a proposal for Seattle, I think, you know, Kasha and I, we put together a tentative schedule in 90 minutes after I was asked. Because you have to have an anchor hotel, your theater, and then you got to have a good bar nearby. Those are like the three key things. And I was like, oh, we got, I'm totally blanking out the name of the hotel right there.
Maxwell.
The Maxwell.
You're welcome. The Pineapple
Hotel. Thank you. The Pineapple.
The Maxwell.
So yeah, the Maxwell.
An amazing hotel.
It is. It's a very nice hotel. Mm-hmm. And they were so accommodating.
Love them.
And then we had Solo right here. And then we got the Uptown just 5 blocks away.
Yeah.
And, you know.
You don't have to go more than 5 blocks.
Yeah. It was all self-contained and it all fit.
Oh, and then we did the event at the KEXP.
Yeah.
I don't know why I call it the KEXP, which is extraordinary.
That was the opening night mixer. And, you know, thank you, Kate Becker, for scoring that for me. It was unbelievable. Because they charge an arm and a leg for that space now. And they charge us almost nothing.
And all I know is like, you need to show up. And I was like, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And normally at the 48-hour screenings, I don't get tongue-tied walking up and talking to people, you know, talking to the audience.
You never look tongue-tied, ever.
And I just kind of go on autopilot after, this is my 18th year doing it.
Well, that's because you love it, too.
Exactly.
That comes through in everything you do. Like, every time I'm like, Kirk loves this.
Yeah. Yeah. And it keeps me sane. I think I'd be a psychopathic killer, a murderer of some sort if I didn't.
Well, I mean, I think it's like everyone in like your 48 world, you're like, will you? And we're like, yes, we will.
Well, right? I got tongue-tied when I was introducing you and Kate.
Because you know us.
Well, and it was just looking out and seeing 400 people from all over the world in our city.
It's our city.
They all traveled to Seattle.
Yeah.
To come to Filmapalooza. And I was just like, I felt such a weight of responsibility. It's like, I'm responsible for these people having a good time for the next 5 days. So I just got so tongue-tied. I was like, I got to get to Amy. I just kind of wanted to throw the microphone and just like, I'm done. I can't do this. This is like, it's so overwhelming. I was terrified and overjoyed at the same time because we had people from the first night of Filmapalooza. We came here, or it was the night before we officially opened. There was a woman here from Durban, South Africa.
Met her.
Yeah. She's never experienced weather below 60 degrees Fahrenheit in her life. Said she's never seen snow. And we were just standing right outside on the sidewalk, The moment she said, I've never seen snow. Snow.
It was like we produced it. It was like a movie.
It was amazing.
Okay.
And I mean, her jaw just, I mean, her eyes went wide and yeah, started snowing for her.
But that was the beautiful thing. So first of all, Seattle's an international city, mm-hmm. right? I feel like funny enough, when I first moved to Seattle way back in 2003, I used to, in this job, I recruit people to come to Washington State. And I was like, I live in Seattle. And they're like, is that in the same area code? Like, no shit. Like, no, it's not in the same area code as Los Angeles. We are just north of you. And they're like, do I know Seattle? What is this? And I was like, Microsoft, Amazon.
Soundgarden.
Sorry. Thank you so much for that. All of those things. But what was wonderful about being in that environment was these filmmakers were sharing, of course, their films, mm-hmm. but their culture.
Exactly.
Right. So I talked to so many people and it wasn't about their film. It was about who they were, what made them tick, how they function differently in their environments than we do here. Mm-hmm. And it was like this, it was like, of course, as you already know, like this international community of filmmakers who are storytellers. And that was like the thing that brought them all together. But then they were able to tell the stories that were unique to them.
Exactly.
And that's what I loved. And I heard, I didn't talk to everyone, but there's so many people there. But I got to talk to so many filmmakers. It was like going to Sundance or going, like, you know, in my previous life, I went to like all the festivals. And it was like going to Cannes, and it was like going to Toronto, and it was going to, like, you know, all of the festivals I used to take things to market with. Mm-hmm. And it's just living and breathing in that moment of the culture and the people and the story.
Well, I don't know if you know this aspect of the 48, but the top 12 to 15 films internationally every year go to a special screening at Cannes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've never been. I want to go one of these years.
Some of the prettiest beaches in the world.
I've always wanted to go to the south of France. Je parle un petit peu de français.
Yeah, je parle français aussi.
Oh, mm-hmm. Très bien.
That was my
très
minor
bien.
In French.
I took 9 years of it.
How'd that go?
It was great. By the time I was 14, I was functionally, you know, conversationally fluent, but mm-hmm. I grew up in San Jose, California. So not much of a reason to ever use it.
9 years, though. That's a lot of years.
I went to a hoity-toity private school, third through eighth grade.
Is that right?
Yeah, and then took 3 more years in high school.
Dude, my son, like, took his, like, mandatory check-the-box Spanish, and he's done.
I really wish I'd taken Spanish because I could have used it every single day of my life since.
It was my minor. Like, what am I doing with that right now?
Yeah. Like, you know, my neighbor is from Mexico. I could speak every single day with him in Spanish.
Mm-hmm. We should take Spanish lessons. That's what we should do in our off time. This is all of our free time.
Yeah, but so I've never been to Cannes.
And you should go.
I really want to. But I've talked to several, you know, we had a Seattle team that went to Cannes in 2016 or 2015. Wait, no. It was our 2014 winners. They went in 2015.
Can you shout them out? Do you remember?
Oh, yeah. Kevin and Philip Harvey from Team Challenge Accepted. Their amazing film, I, Charon. It was it's one of the funniest damn things I've ever seen in my life. It's like Mel Brooks level comedy. And
dude, and they live right here.
Here. Yeah. Just, they I love mean, it. Like just up the hill, literally from us right now. And
this is why I continue, like, I've been the film commissioner for damn forever. And this is what keeps me going, is like, I get inspired by the storytellers and the movies and the passion. Mm-hmm. Like, that is what keeps me going.
Me too.
I know. Because you've been doing the 48 for how long?
This is my 18th year. I started it here in Seattle
in
2005.
You're longer than me as the film commissioner. That's saying a lot, darling.
Yeah. And I can't see myself not doing this.
Wait, I just want to pause.
Okay.
18 fucking years. That's incredible. By the way, and thank you. Nobody ever thanks you, I'm sure, because
I do actually get a lot of thanks.
That's
I do.
So nice.
I do get it a lot, and it's I appreciate it. I really appreciate it. It helps.
What an amazing contribution.
It gets stressful because I have to tell people, hey, you know, your film was late or you didn't get the prop in. And I have to break some hearts, which is, it's the hardest part. But yeah, I do get a lot of thanks. I'll get people to say, you know, because of you, because of your event, I now have a career.
Or a community.
A new person. Exactly.
Wow. That's a long time.
2005 is the first year. And God, James Kemble scared the shit out of me that year.
He scares a lot of people.
Well, it was his first year on the job. And it was my first year doing this thing. And I said, hey, we're going to be, you know, I want to get off on the right foot with the city and do things by the book, and sent him an email. I didn't know him at all. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, hundreds of filmmakers are going to flood the streets of Seattle. And he sent me an email saying, I need to have a meeting with you.
Period.
Yeah. And I show up, I take the series of elevators up to the
two series up to the 57th floor. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I get up there, and this is before Chris Swenson's even involved. Mm-hmm. That's how long ago this was. And there's a representative from the fire department, from the city, and from the police department. And I was just like, am I going to get arrested? What did I just step into? And I didn't get a lecture or anything. They legitimately wanted to know what I was doing. And they asked me a lot of questions. Then I said, this is my first year. I don't really know what to expect. And they just said, okay, you know, here's all of our guidelines. We're not going to issue your team's permits, but here are the rules that they need to follow. And most of them are just common sense, common courtesy.
100%.
And since then, we've never had...
Knock the wood. Whatever you're about to say, knock the wood. Mm-hmm. He's knocking his head for anyone who's listening.
We haven't had any calls into the police or the fire department, and... You know, I get either Chris Swenson or another representative from the city to come in to one of our social events or at the kickoff and talk about it.
I mean, that's our job, right?
Yeah.
Is to make magic happen.
Exactly.
And, you know, James Kemble was a magician for sure.
Yes, he was.
We were, you know, we worked very closely together, as you know.
I loved working with James and with Chris in the office. And I remember we had that kind of existential crisis.
There's been many existential crises.
Yeah, when James got shit canned.
Oh, yeah, he got fired.
He got fired. And
but he owned it. That's what I loved about him.
Yeah. And I remember stewing over it here. Mm-hmm. You know, I was furious at the mayor, at Ed Murray. And I didn't know Kate. Didn't know what to expect. I knew she was involved in Vera Project and whatnot, but I didn't know her for anything. And I was seething. And my wife just said, are you going to stew in your anger? Or are you going to fucking do something about it? So we set up those series of caucus meetings.
Yep.
And I remember Kate showed up to every single one. And the first time she showed up, I think it was at a meeting we had at Solo's sibling bar, St. John's, up on Capitol Hill.
Where I introduced her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she just won everyone over immediately. Mm-hmm. And I adore Kate Becker. She had big shoes to fill. And she had to go and order herself a bigger set of shoes.
Fair enough.
She really owned that role and did a great job in it. And
yeah.
Just her. I'm really glad that, you know, she got that job kind of out of that crappy situation, because she's fantastic. Kate's amazing, and she's doing great work with the county now.
Yes, and I will, I'm going to just blame James Keblis for my tattoo. And that is a, I'm going to blame James Keblis for my tattoo, and that is the only thing that I will say in the podcast about that.
Well, you know, again, Filmapalooza, I'm getting another tattoo. I showed you the design.
You did show me the design.
And I can't remember if I've talked about the new design, but so I'm going to be starting another podcast that's more personally self-involved. And I'm calling it Metal Dork from the Burbs, because that's what
I am. That's a great title.
It's kind of Brian Posehn's whole shtick, but
fair.
You know, we grew up in the same area. He's old, 5 years older than me, but I'm sure we were at the same Death Angel and Testament shows.
100% you were.
I'm sure we were at the 100%. Omni. We probably bashed heads in the pit at some point, I'm sure. But so this year we're not getting 48 themed tattoos at Filmapalooza. At least not Indra and I. Indra from Arnhem, Netherlands. She's going to get a Stargate symbol because she's a full-on geek. And our
for those that may not know what is Stargate.
Stargate the show, Stargate SG-1. Yeah, she's getting the A symbol. And I'm a huge, huge, huge Rush fan. And I decided my buddies in Toronto made me an honorary Torontonian. And I love the song YYZ, which opens with Neil Peart tapping out. And I should say YYZ because it's Canadian.
Fair.
You know, tapping out the Morse code to YYZ on his symbol. And so I looked up the Morse code for YYZ and kind of altered it to my liking. And so I'm going to get the YYZ in Morse code, probably on my right wrist. And it's like my ultimate geek tattoo. It's how I get my Rush tattoo without advertising. I have a Rush tattoo.
Having seen the visual, it's pretty fucking rad. Just saying. Like, it's pretty cool.
Well, I've just, you know, I'm 50 now and I'm just embracing my dorkiness.
You know what? I think that's what you do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Embrace it all.
Yeah.
Get the tattoo. But like, it's subversive. It's not like, you know, you're not like putting it out there. It's like fucking cool.
Yeah. Well, I remember when I was coming back, when Kasha and I went to Filmapalooza in Paris in 2018, the first international.
Paris.
Olivier pulled out all the stops. And I got to use my French.
Parlez-vous français?
Yeah, oui. I actually, you know, my reading is much better than my spoken French. But I could converse with people on the street and mm-hmm. and people would come up to me and ask me things in French and I was able to respond, which blew me away. But when we were coming home, so we flew Paris to Toronto, Toronto to Seattle. And I was so excited. I wanted to get my YYZ stamp in my passport. Like, oh, the Rush geek in me. It's like, oh yes, I'm going to get my YYZ stamp. No, I got a TSA stamp.
TSA.
I was so mad. Oh, it's like, I'm in Toronto. I want my...
Not okay.
Yeah, I was so
but
mad.
But you got into the country and out of the country, so that's
exactly.
Good,
so we bought a bunch of coffee crisp at the...
Right on.
Yeah, bought a bunch of coffee crisp and made my sister-in-law jealous.
Mm-hmm. As is... what you want to do when you
exactly,
travel.
Exactly. Got to bring back the local favorites. When you're in Canada, you got to get the coffee crisp.
Do the coffee crisp.
I love that stuff. Oh, well, you have a thing to get to, don't you?
I do have a thing. It, like, this is so fun.
I haven't seen you in person in 2 years.
I know.
You know, I miss film day.
Film day, the annual advocacy day in Olympia. Although we did it virtual, which was a bit of a, we liken it to at Washington. So it, you know, we have legislators that are trying to do all these things. It was a bit like being in air traffic control because it was all virtual and it was a shit show, but it was great.
Yeah. Yeah. It was. Oh, I didn't get to talk to any of my three legislators. I was looking forward to it.
But we're feeling good about where the bill to increase funding for our program. So maybe that worked. Maybe you should not talk to your legislator.
Well, I'm in District 33 and all three of them are supportive.
They're
great. I love living in a district where all three of my representatives are women. It's fantastic. Yeah. They're all great. And I've gone to the film day enough times and met with them that
so many film
they
days.
Know me.
So many film days.
And the last in-person one I went to was in 2019. I didn't get to go to 2020 because...
We didn't do 2020.
Oh.
No, we canceled.
Oh. Okay, I don't feel as bad because...
No, you did. I mean...
I was going to cancel it because that was like a month after we got our dog Darby.
Yes, I know Darby.
Oh, and she was...
She's a bunch of love.
She's a whole lot of dog.
She's a whole lot. No, love. A whole lot of love.
She is. I mean, she's... Oh, God, she's so my dog. It's ridiculous. Well, when we got Tony...
Look at what I say about my 14-year-old son. Yeah, that's what I say about him, too.
Well, when we got our dog Tony, he's the pit bull, Jack Russell. Yeah. And, you know, we got him... Because, you know, our old beloved Roscoe had passed and I needed a dog. And so we got Tony and he's just, he's a pit bull Jack Russell. You can imagine
lots
his personality.
Of energy.
I mean, boink.
Yep.
Like a mountain goat.
Yep.
And about a month after we got him, Kasha and I are in the living room just watching some TV. And I see Tony, just the way his body language is and the way he's looking at her. And I go, Kasha, he's your dog. And she goes, oh, shit. We got the dog for you. And I'm like, they bond with who they bond. Do. And I know Tony loves me.
We all love the dogs, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Growing up, all the dogs were my mom's dogs. I mean, she was a whisperer before that was a thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, dogs would run across the street just to say hi to my mom. Literally. And my brother and I each got a bit of that.
They feel you.
Yeah.
They feel you.
And so Kasha was like, oh, shit, we got the dog for you. And she's like, you're not upset. I'm like, no, I grew up with my mom. You know my mom.
No.
And
the dog is the family. It's a family.
Yeah.
You know?
And then we got Darby and oh God, she is so my dog.
She's so cute though.
Both of our dogs are just
so
unbearably
cute.
Yeah.
And you know, they integrate.
Yeah. We decided to go with the stupid dogs, you know, the Jack Russells and the Shepherd Malinois.
My dog Lily is so pretty.
Oh, your dog is gorgeous.
But just maybe not the smartest. She's so pretty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, a very happy-go-lucky breed.
Oh, she's like a lab mix of some sort. I got her in front of the Krispy Kreme in Tacoma out of a box. So I don't know who had the flashing sucker sign on her forehead, but it was definitely me that day.
Well, it was funny. So we adopted our cat, Pete. Mm-hmm. After Kasha's cat passed away, Lucy, who's an amazing cat.
Like every time you talk about all of your pets, I'm like, oh, I remember. Oh, yes. I know. I like feel like I'm part of your family.
Well, it was funny because it was only 4 months after, 3 or 4 months after Lucy passed, Kasha and I were having Thanksgiving dinner by herself at home. And she just looks across the table and goes, want kitty.
You can't really say no to that.
No. And I'm like, are you sure? Because it was pretty, you know, she'd had Lucy for a long time. It was very, very attached.
That is a directive. It's not a question.
She said, want kitty. So we went to.
Want kitty, period. Yeah. Not question.
Yeah. So we went to the Humane Society on Black Friday.
Love the Humane.
And we wanted to get a black cat because they're free and statistically less adoptable because people are superstitious and
is
stupid.
Right?
Yeah.
I wouldn't even think of that. But
yeah,
yes,
Black
of course
Friday,
they are.
Black cats are free. And we met some cats that we liked, but then we went into the shy room and there was this white and gray cat that just looked so sad. So I spent some time saying hi to him and I'm like, gosh, come in here, come in here. And I'm like, what about this guy?
Is the cat yours?
Yeah. And, and then, you know, he turned around and looked at us and he reached out and touched my finger. And I'm like, oh, that's it. We're taking him. And that was Pete. And
they pick you. Exactly. No matter what, they pick you.
Yeah. And then Roscoe came into our life a couple of months later.
So much love in that house.
Yeah. And then the next Thanksgiving, we had some people, some friends over for Thanksgiving dinner, and I had a new smoker and I smoked all the turkey. And after the friends left, Kasha and I are having some drinks and we got space, and I turned to Kasha and go, want kitty. We went to the Humane Society on Black Friday, and we were gonna get a black cat or no cat.
That was
the condition. So we meet this black cat that we like. He was a year old, and a friend of ours who used to work in the kitchen here at Solo was also there looking for a cat. And the woman there said, there's an issue. We're like, oh crap, Sloan got this cat before us. That wasn't the case. She's like, well, this guy's in a bonded pair with one of his litter mates.
Oh dear.
And like, oh well, where's that cat? Point under the cat tree.
I'm sorry, who had this flashing sucker sign on there?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yep. And so we just looked down and went, that will take them.
Yeah, they win. But those the cats two... win. The Humane Society, you win. Yeah. Everyone won.
Yeah. So we got a black cat and bonus cat.
Yeah. It's a plus one.
And they were integrated into the entire household in less than 24 hours.
Beautiful.
They just wanted to come out. And
it's a house of love.
Yeah.
And pizza.
It's not. Yes. Yeah. You have to come over. And
I know. I'm inviting myself again.
Yes.
Pizza. Stone oven pizza
built by my engineer of a wife.
Although you said you were the cook at the beginning of this
podcast.
She's
the builder, I'm the baker,
so there you go.
Yeah,
it's a perfect match.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go sit at the end of the bar to find my perfect match.
All right,
that's what you said at the beginning of the podcast. I'm gonna do it. Val, telling Val, the, you know, the owner of the Solo bar, I'm gonna sit at the end of the bar until I find my perfect match.
All right, Kasha and I will come here and introduce you to all the people we know.
Will you bring Pete?
Oh, he would freak out. He's the shy one.
Oh.
Sean and Gus would come and hang out.
They're that very would social. Be like, no cats, but lots of love. But
dogs,
yes.
Dogs have been in here before.
Yeah.
Roscoe's been in here.
Lily would be the same way, though. She'd be like, no,
yeah,
not my thing.
We don't want to get Val in trouble with the health department.
No, we don't, because we love Val and the Solo bar. But I do, before we sign off,
okay,
just want to reiterate, as the Washington State Film Commissioner, how much the 48 means to us in terms of what it does for our community, what it does for the filmmakers, and what it does for us to really think about what is the future of filmmaking in Washington. And you do that, Chris does that, but it means a lot to us as the purveyor of what is next in Washington. And I feel passionately about it. And I love watching every single film. And I look forward to finding out what's next for you. I won't watch the horror. I'm not a big fan of the horror.
That's cool.
Lots of love.
Most of them are comedies, but
I know, but
bloody comedies.
Can't. Yeah.
Yeah.
But thank you for what you do for 18 years. 18 years.
Well, I'm crossing my fingers because, as you know, I'm a huge fan of yours and what you do at Washington Filmworks.
18 years.
Yeah.
You trumped me at my 15. Just saying
well,
that.
Well, you do it full time. This is the part-time gig for me.
Well, it's love for both of us, which is what it's all about.
Because, you know, I'm crossing my fingers that we get it this year. You have put so much of your time, energy, and self into it.
I'm just putting one. By the way, if that happens, we're going to sit at the bar together and celebrate.
Oh, you know it.
Here at the Solo.
Because it's
a long time coming.
It's a long time coming. And
long time coming.
God damn it. We deserve it.
Amen.
We deserve it. We I am sick of watching friends move to Oregon, to LA, to New York, to Atlanta. I'm sick of losing friends to other cities.
125%
of you. Yeah. Because I'm here.
I'm here too. I'm here too. So let's keep our friends here.
All right. Yeah. I'm sick of seeing them go.
Me too.
Maybe we can get some of them back.
We will.
Yeah.
If we get what we're aiming for, we will. For sure.
Well, Amy, thank you so much.
Oh my gosh. Thank you.
It's so good to see you in person again. And
I know. It's so good to see you.
Share a drink and shoot the shit.
Share a drink and shoot the shit. And 18 years. There you go. All right. That's where we're ending it right there. Thank you for all you do.
Oh, you're quite welcome. And thank you for everything you do.
All right. So it really doesn't matter what you look like, say, or do.
I know that I had a cooler weekend than you. 48 Hour Heroes Origin Stories is a production of Media Without Borders and the Seattle 48 Hour Film Project.